Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Lou Bank.
I am Chapati Yuan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Green Geeks bartenders better understand agave spirits in rural Mexico.
And today we're talking about cocktails for the undecima vez. How many times have we talked about cocktails? 110 times?
Is it just in a episodes? Day you and I will talk cocktails 110 times any day.
I don't think we've done that many episodes about cocktails, but this one I think it's actually interesting. So please, Senor Lu, go ahead and say your proposition.
Sure, yeah. So there's this idea circulating around USA bars, at least, and I'm guessing, you know, European and stuff, but this idea circulating around that you should only ever use Espadin Mezcal if you're making a mezcal cocktail.
And but, what's the rationale behind that?
Well, you know, it's a great question. So the rationale that I always hear is, well, you know, everything else is so precious and special that it doesn't make sense to use it in a cocktail. That's one.
So Espadin is not precious and special. So
exactly.
It was still made by the same people that we respect without end, and just suddenly, just because a different species is not special. Okay, got it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one idea. The other is everything else is too expensive. That if you use, right, I mean, obviously, Tepeztate would be like the outlier.
Wait, Tepeztate. Nobody says Tepeztate. Tepeztate.
Oh, that's not wrong. Are we going to have a whole episode just about how to pronounce Tepeztate, Tepeztate?
Even with X, people say Tepeztate.
You're just wrong. I had this whole debate with our friend Rob Lopata, and then we ended up down in Miahuatlán talking to Manuel Ramos, and there he pronounced it Tepeztate.
I think he was trying to be educational to you guys. But anyways, continue.
So, you know, never use one of those because it would be too expensive. It's too precious, too rare, and too expensive. It makes for an expensive cocktail.
I mean, I can get behind that, though, because, I mean, as we know, bars are, especially in the US of A and other first world countries, you guys are really struggling with some of the economics behind bars. So I can see that.
Oh, that's really funny. You, in fact, kind of sent me in this direction with something you said to me. You don't even remember.
No, what?
So you had said, why don't we have this whole episode about just doing the upgrading of cocktails?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, how is that not that?
Oh, I'm just saying, like, there's a few places that, and even in Mexico City, I know a few places that have made a commitment out of their ethos, and I know that they're hurting a little bit of their finances, but out of their ethos, even their well mezcal is something really competent. And but yeah, let's get into the upgrade idea a little bit further ahead. But what's the other reason why people wouldn't use well agave to do cocktails? Are just those two?
Well,
is that the beginning and the end?
Well, hang on a second, because you said wild agave, and I just said agave that's not Espadin.
Oh, that's true. Okay, so just agave that is not Espadin. Is there any other reason?
Nope, I'm going to go with that's it.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, the first time in my adult life that I drank what I think people will call, yeah.
Hang on, can you give me a number there? I want to know the number. At what age does a chava reach maturity?
Well, 12. Like that's the commonly agreed number.
That's where you're ready to reproduce, is it 12?
Well, it was where I had my first and only age crisis. That is a true story. But 30 meant nothing to me. 12? Jesus. That meant a lot. But the first time I had what I think in the argot, it's a crafted cocktail, was when I went to New York, actually, with you, to Roberta's, to probably record what will become this podcast. And then I went to Existing Conditions. A friend of mine took me to this cocktail bar called Existing Conditions. And it's really funny because we walked in there and this friend of ours had been there. I think he knew somebody there or something. And he had this reputation of being someone that knew a lot about agave. So they were like, hey, guys, we are trying to make a cocktail with a Karaguinsky. And we feel very nervous if we are honoring completely this agave. So we would like to serve it to you and tell us if it's a waste of this mezcal or if it's actually fortunate. So we drank it, and I'm happy to say it was an extremely pretty cocktail. Mm-hmm. I think it's been some of the best things that I've ever tried in terms of cocktails. Only detail being, if I don't misremember, it was $45.
Okay. Cool. So, but you know, I'm wondering, Chava, the words that you're using, you have a very specific way of phrasing things. It's really beautiful. It's poetry. But I'm wondering, did they literally use that word? They wanted to make sure they were honoring?
Yeah. I remember that clearly. I remember that with extreme precision. Yes.
So here's a thought about that. And this is one of the reasons this is banging around in my head, right, is I think a way to honor an agave is make sure you use the hell out of it so that agave farmers are encouraged to grow more of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to do almost with a bizarre morality that I see within U.S. people that are really into mezcal. You know, as I like to say, mezcal is not wine. It was not made to crown kings. You know, like it's not what the Pope drinks before giving mass, right? It's not a sacrament. It is a drink that it's an everyday drink. It's a drink for festivities. It's holy, but it's also a mess. It's a holy mess, to put it in one word. And but for some reason, it's almost like people from other places, and I get it, and I do almost the same sometimes, because I was just in a trip in Michoacán, and you get so touched about the capacity and the beauty of this nature and everything that is attached to this drink that suddenly for you outsider, it really becomes holy. And then you go back to where you're from and you try to tell people it's because you don't understand what I've seen. You understand what these people mean, what this nature means. And it's sort of, you try to make it, you try to create respect for it, but I think it backfires in many ways. Because...
Well, but I also think there's different ways to show respect.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, what I guess the end of my argument will be if you find ways for people to enjoy this drink... Mm-hmm. In a very relaxed, very fun, very amazing way, regardless of what modifiers you need or you decide to add to the spirit, I think that is the best way of sharing a piece of the experience that you had in Mexico that made you feel so strongly about the spirit.
Yeah, I like that for sure. For sure. And, you know, and I think, you know, to get back to the concept of how do you honor the agave? Like, if we don't diversify the agaves that we're consuming, right, if brands won't diversify the agaves that they are cultivating and bringing to market, it's going to lead to the extinction of more agaves. It's not like you save a Karwinski by never drinking a Karwinski. You save a Karwinski by showing the brands that are actually bringing to market mezcal that you want more Karwinski. And if you think about, is it accurate to say that the biggest market for mezcal is the USA?
In terms of liters?
Yeah.
I'm actually not sure.
I think that's what it said in that latest CRM report.
Maybe documented. But as
yeah, fair.
You know, like maybe the mezcal that gets into the books. Yeah, maybe.
You're right. And so if you think about that and you think about how gringos tend to consume mezcal, how Yankees tend to consume spirits, period, it's cocktails. So if we don't see more of these cocktails, I don't think we're going to ever get past the monocultures of Blue Weber and Espadin.
And I think that this also, I mean, and it's fascinating how the consumption patterns obviously impact the environments and ecosystems where these things are being grown, right? And I think there's also something bizarre, and I'm just going to throw this at you. I don't know if I am misreading this. You're the American. You might give me more insight into this. But I think that sometimes they're only using Espadin in cocktails. It's, in my understanding, it's almost underestimating the palate of the beginner. They sort they sort of say, like, you know, Espadin tends to be more simple, completely untrue in my experience. It tends to have more of the smoke thing that people are looking for, because that is what the mezcal that many brands have articulated for the export market is. And in a way, it's like, because these people don't know, let's just give them Espadin that is not going to give them a very strong experience. And I will say that's the stupidest freaking thing ever. If you have somebody that is going to drink their first cocktail of mezcal, give them the best experience of their lives. Give them something that they will remember forever and make them junkies of mezcal.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I think you're right that, okay, smoky is what most Yankees think of when they think of mezcal. And I think that, you know, look, you can make any agave smoky, right?
And they're even going to say smoky when it's not smoky. So it doesn't matter. As long as the word mezcal is there, I've served stuff that had no choices of smoke. They will still say smoky. So whatever. Like, honestly, it doesn't matter if it has the smoke or not.
Well, hang on. When you say it had no traces of smoke, are you talking about agaves that were steam cooked, or you didn't actually recognize?
Oh, no. Like that they were cooked with wood, but the smokiness of it was so buried behind so much stuff.
I think that's maybe something you and I can do, and of course probably everybody who listens to this podcast, because we drink so much of this that the smoke becomes a thing like in the back to us. But so frequently I'll be drinking with newbies who are like, oh, this is so smoky. And I'm like, really? Like, I don't get it.
Well,
but
then it doesn't matter. Then it doesn't matter. Double my argument. It doesn't matter if it's Espadin or if it's, So the smoke is going to be there regardless for the beginner.
Well, but I'm thinking now about our friends in Guanajuato at Via Suso, right? And Lucy Pistolas, who have that beautiful Salmiana that's steam cooked. And so, you know, I guess to your point, will somebody taste that and taste the caramelization of the agave, and will that hit their palate as smoky, even though there's no smoke?
I mean, yes, maybe. And, you know, like, I think my best example of a bar that has already engaged into this behavior that we're trying to promote is La Farmacia Rita Perez in Guadalajara. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to get there, like, right when they were opening, like, at 1 p.m. on a Thursday or something like that. I spent there literally, like, 4 or 5 hours. And it got to the point where I was like, I cannot finish everything that I want to try. So don't take this as disrespect, but I want to try as much as I can. And they had all these amazing cocktails using sotoles, using mesonte, the mesonte line, using all kinds of super precious, beautiful agave spirits. And I think that, I mean, that has to be so much fun for the bartender, for the beverage director, for the people drinking. That's just so much fun for everybody involved. And let's say maybe they have a really good price because they're in Guadalajara. But if that's not the case, maybe going back to this idea of upgrading your cocktail, maybe you have your normal cocktail made with, you know, your well, super cheap, whatever, Espadin. And then if someone is more interested or wants to have a different experience, they can pay $5, $4 and get a significantly better agave spirit in their margarita or in whatever drink they're preparing for them.
Well, or an additional $40. You know, the thing that we see through these DISCUS reports, and again, you know, that's just reporting on sales in the United States of America of spirits and wine and beer. But, you know, what we see in that report is that the stuff that's selling is the stuff that's most highly priced. It's not the cheap stuff. And that suggests to me that maybe there's a bigger market for more expensive cocktails than we recognize.
And honestly, I think that the market for mezcal on-premise is usually older people. I don't see a bunch of 30-year-old kids being the most excited about this. I think, I see this from other projects that I'm part of. A significant chunk of the market of the most specialized agave spirits are 45 and plus.
Well, but I think you're also looking at the market, like, I'm guessing you're talking about Maguey Malate, right?
Well, and other stuff that I've, honestly, everything that I've done in my life, be it craft, expensive alcohol, just everything that I've worked in, my best market is 60 and plus. It starts getting good at 45.
Right. But, you know, but I think if you join me one night at Cindy's Rooftop in Chicago, you'd see an awful lot of 20-somethings drinking mezcal cocktails.
Yeah. I don't know if they are the more sensitive target towards these kind of arguments.
Oh,
it'll be amazing if we can convert them. It'll be amazing. And Rita Perez and this bar I was talking about, they're definitely 30-year-olds. Yeah. And but it's just normal for them because, you know, like they sort of they have that at their fingertips. And to be honest, against all odds, I will claim, and I might get lynched for this, but in Guadalajara, it's rare that people drink good tequila or that they have a good background of on agave spirits. And Rita Perez is there to prove wrong that you cannot get a market that is usually more connected to Bacardi and to beers and convert them into super complex cocktails. So yeah, maybe there's a hope. Maybe there is a hope.
There's a hope. That's all I was. There's a chance. That's all I'm looking for, Chava.
Okay. So I'll give you that. I'll give you hope. Do you have any conclusion else that you want to say?
My conclusion is just that we should never use Espadín Mezcal to make cocktails.
Or that it can also be used.
Hey, as an also, it can be used, sure.
Grand.
But okay, but I really do think if what we want to do is preserve the biodiversity of agave and by extension the biodiversity of Mexico, we got to start using a lot more agaves to make our cocktails than just Espadín and Blue Weber.
And keep on having fun, because if it becomes in 10 years, we all only have Espadín in the markets. Because that's what I ate everything. I don't want to be part of the mezcal industry anymore. That'll be boring as hell. And then we'll talk about destroying a bunch of traditions, expertise, ecosystems. So if in 10 years, the only thing we can find on the shelves everywhere is Espadín, like, I'm good. I can do other stuff.
We'll find a different road trip?
Yeah, we'll find something else to do.
Okay, sounds good, Chav. I'll catch you next episode.
Yeah. Bye.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Peribán. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.